Final hour with Professor Richard Wiseman. We're going to take your calls with him. The Independent on Sunday out there in Britain named him as one of the top 100 people who make Britain a better place to live. We'll be back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, tell us about Professor Daryl Byrne and his work at Cornell University.
Well, Daryl is another parapsychologist, and as well as being quite a well-known psychologist as well, actually. But Daryl has carried out a series of experiments where people appear to be able to see into the future. And these are experiments run on a laptop, and they seem to have to know what stimulus essentially is going to come up next. And so we tried to replicate those experiments, the three separate groups in the UK that tried to do it, and couldn't replicate them. We got null results, which is often the way with parapsychology experiments. We tried to publish our findings, and the journal which had published Daryl's actually refused to publish them. They don't publish replications. And so what you have, and this is a bit like trying to get the Paranormality book out there, is you have a system which is very keen to tell you these things are true, but yet doesn't publish the other side of the story, which is kind of worrying because it means that scientists and sometimes the public are only really hearing one side of the story. So it was a very similar experience there. So I know, you know, people who believe in the paranormal often say that the kind of establishment is against them and it's a big conspiracy theory, but you know, the opposite is true. It's quite hard to get the skeptical message out some of the time as well.
Well, it is. And I think one of the reasons why this program is so successful is we try to balance this as much as we can. I mean, regardless of what our views are about the paranormal, whether we agree or not, you should have a right to say things that you've done your research without being muffled. And I hope we've done that with you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what's great about this is, you know, just giving people a platform to talk about the paranormal regardless of their point of view. I think that's the way forward because, you know, and I'm not arguing that the paranormal phenomena absolutely could not exist. All I'm saying is scientists have looked into some of them, they've found explanations, and if you want to be, if you like, an informed consumer, an informed individual, you want to know about those explanations before you decide whether or not these things are true or not. And it has been surprisingly difficult, even as a best-selling author and with other books like The Luck Factor and 59 Seconds and so on, to get that other side of the argument out there. But, you know, it's also an exciting time because of the internet. You know, there are ways now of spreading information away from those more kind of managed mainstream channels.
Well, and I've noticed you have websites for all your books. I mean, so you understand viral marketing.
I do enjoy messing around on the web because there's a huge freedom to that. So that's the YouTube channel. Also on Twitter, I have about 90,000 followers, and that's where I put out all the sort of bits and pieces of the talks I'm doing and ideas and so on. We are living in a different world to even 5 years ago. I mean, being able to put the book out on Amazon and also on the App Store means that as an author, you can get the information out there in a way that was just impossible a few years ago without a mainstream publisher. So, yeah, we live in exciting times, I think.
Richard, right before we take calls, is there any area that we would call paranormal, that you've looked at, that you say, that's possible, that could be?
I guess the area that makes me most curious would be something like experimental parapsychology work. So the sort of work I'm talking about, whether we mentioned Daryl, mm-hmm. Where you have under very controlled circumstances a small but you know interesting effect sometimes emerges. I think there that's where I'd be most curious, and I don't think we can say with 100% certainty, you know, we know exactly what's going on. When it comes to people's experiences with ghosts and psychics and mediums and so on, I'm far more skeptical. But the lab-based work, you know, I think we're not 100% certain what's going on, and maybe there is something there, but it's just too early to really sort of make a judgment call one way or the other.
All right, let's go to the phones now, east of the Rockies, Sherry in Southfield, Michigan. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I saw my father the day after he died. My girlfriend's father, I knew he died before my friend told me. I also stopped a baby from being run over two different times. I also saw onto the other side where my male relatives were in a group. So I would like to know, are you saying that this did not happen?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Your experiences are absolutely genuine. What I'm saying is the interpretation, the notion that this is paranormal, there could be no normal explanation for it, is the one that I would query. So if, you know, for example, we were to monitor your experiences, because all of them are in retrospect now, they've happened. But if in the future we say, okay, when you have one of those sort of strange predictions, email me, and then we'll in the sort of, you know, log those and see how well you do. Yeah, if over time that was a sort of very high hit rate, then that would be very surprising. I suspect that won't be the case based on my past research, but I might be wrong. You know, I'm very happy to test these sorts of claims.
Do you believe me that I really saw my father? He was right across the table from me for a half of a second.
I totally believe that that's the experience you had. There's no way in which I'm sort of doubting that experience. The question is, was it really the spirit of your father, or is that something which is happening in your mind?
No, and it was really him. I saw him.
Yeah, it's very difficult to try and tease those two apart, because obviously people have all sorts of hallucinations, and you don't know whether the person is actually there or it's in your mind. We can't tell just from the testimony.
Regardless, Richard, if it's in your mind or there, you believe that.
Well, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, you know, there's no doubt about that. It's just that question of trying to understand what's happening based purely on people's experiences. It's very difficult. You know, we weren't there. We didn't have a camera. You know, you can't go back and analyze the situation. And that's what's frustrating sometimes about the paranormal. Often they arise. The experiences arise in everyday life when you can't do rigorous experiments, so you can never know for certain.
Well, let's go to Mike in Kansas City, Missouri on the wildcard line. Mike, thanks. Go ahead.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
I've been listening to you for the past a couple hours here, and I've been questioning myself now, because I've had a few experiences where I've been through the fourth dimension. I mean, I've been in the lateral world. I really have been in there. And it's someplace I want to go back. And I don't believe in God. I'm not a religious guy.
Right.
I was born up Catholic, and it was so prejudiced the way I was brought up. I mean, if you like the Baptists, you're going to go to hell. If you eat meat on Friday, you're going to hell. And then they changed the whole goddamn thing. So my understanding is there's a supreme being out there, but I ain't calling him God, not the way these people are. I notice there's a parallel universe out there. I've been through it. I've been in it. I mean, I didn't want to come back, and I woke up, and I was back here. So am I dreaming that, or is there something to this, or what?
Well, if you say you woke up and you came back, it would suggest that you may well have been dreaming it. Obviously, we have all sorts of bizarre dreams. So it would be, again, a question of what the evidence is. I mean, if you're just saying I went to a rather strange place where normal rules didn't apply, well, you know, dream logic is the during dreams normal rules don't apply. It would be a question of trying to present some kind of evidence that you really did go somewhere, you know, that was very different to just a dream. So it's tricky to know one way or the other just based on your experience there.
Is it conceivable that, you know, when people have these after life experiences and they're on the other side, that they see things? Are you saying it's biological, or what could be going on there, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, the near-death experiences are very curious, and they do occur in many different cultures. Although the religious figure that you meet does depend on your beliefs, so you tend to meet you know, the God that you believe in. There's been some arguments that it is the sort of dying brain, as it were, because all these people are experiencing physical trauma, and it could be the brain's sort of last sort of death throes. I think what's most curious about near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences is that people say they have this sense of leaving their body. And so in various hospital wards now across the world, they've put targets on top of wardrobes and sort of other places where you can't see them normally, but you would be able to see them if you really were floating up by the ceiling. And my understanding is that so far no one has seen those targets. So again, I suspect expect that experience is being manufactured by the brain in a fascinating way, but it isn't actually you leaving your body or indeed drifting up to the afterlife.
All right, next up we go to Seaford, Delaware. Denise's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
Good to have you with
My
us.
My question is that, I'm sorry. First of all, I think your work is fascinating and very important in some respects because people do manufacture by looking for things. But on the flip side, in terms of what tools you use to measure paranormal, people who get scratched, you know, by entities or things flying off of Ouija boards, various events that occur, these out-of-body experiences, which, by the way, not everyone sees somebody they believe in. Sometimes it's somebody they don't expect to see. My question really is, you're talking about the brain functions. Do you believe there is a mind that exists like a super conscious intelligence beyond, or is this strictly, like George said, biological or brain phenomenon? How do you measure this?
Sure. It's a very good question. Once you start getting to mind and then consciousness, those are huge mysteries. We do not know. I don't even have any insight into how the brain produces conscious awareness. So, you know, you look around the room now, you see things, you're aware of them. We just don't understand how the brain does that. It is mysterious in that sense. What I do...
So if I understand you correctly, that would be somewhat the boundary of limitation of what you can test within. You're looking strictly then more within the brain because
I guess that's true, that there is some argument that the brain produces the sense of awareness, that kind of free will and the conscious state is sort of an illusion produced by the brain, and then you get into sort of deep philosophical territory. But certainly I think there are genuine mysteries out there to be solved. I wouldn't pretend to know how the brain produces a feeling of consciousness. My feeling is that over time we will work that out. I'm not saying we have an explanation for everything. That made life extremely dull. I'm just saying that for some things we know what's going on, and it's important to understand those explanations.
Okay, next up we go to Petaluma, California. Patricia's on Coast to Coast. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a question for you because when I was 11 years old, me and my another little girl, and she was 10 years old at the time, she was spending the night at my house, and the pencil, we were sitting in the kitchen, and the pencil came off of the refrigerator, flew across in front of us, and the calendar pages flew up, and it circled a page, a date, and it flew back in front of us, and we just stared at each other. And that was the first time that I had had this experience. The second time, I was 12, I was standing in my room brushing my hair, and the curtain started blowing up, and I checked, and the windows were closed, and I could just blew it off, and I kept brushing my hair, and did it again, and I checked it again just to make sure, and they were closed, and there was no... there's no wind blowing the curtains.
How would science explain that, Richard?
Well, it's a very good question. I guess you're closest there to something like sort of poltergeist phenomena, or the movement of objects. And the poltergeist, I mean, I should make my position clear. I'm not saying that you can explain absolutely any story or experience that people come up with. What I'm saying is that when you can conduct the investigation, then there tends to be a rational explanation for it. So in previous poltergeist examples, when we and other groups have looked at them, you can see the explanation. In this particular instance, you know, if a pencil really does fly across the room and circles a date on a calendar, that's truly phenomenal. That's fantastic. The sort of downside is that we only have the eyewitness testimony to go with it. If you weren't recording the event, there's no reason why you'd expect it to have happened and so on. So I guess my feeling is we don't know what happened here. But also it's to say to people that if those sorts of things do start to happen, the important thing to do is try and get the sort of solid evidence, get it on tape as soon as possible, or to call in an investigation team so they can help you with that. Because if we could get that stuff on tape, then it would really be quite phenomenal. So far, that hasn't emerged from this work, but who knows? Maybe it will in the future.
Are you saying, Richard, that let's assume that there is a ghostly world, that it's real if science can explain that?
Well, I would do the opposite. I'd say there's no reason to assume that. What I would say is that you need evidence that the phenomena are actually happening, that you've ruled out every sort of normal explanation and that you know that these things are actually happening. And then the question would be, well, what would cause them? Is it ghosts? Is it God? Is it our mind or whatever? But let's take that first stage. How do you know that these things are happening? The answer has to be, well, you've got to have pretty compelling evidence. And just one person telling their story will never be that compelling. A group of people, well, maybe. But they can be misled as well. But getting it on film, and the ways in which there could be no explanation for it, that's where you need to go. But of course, you've got to know it's going to happen in order to be doing that. So it's very tricky areas to work in.
Let's go to Whitefish, Montana. It's Mike's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mike.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Great.
Hello, Richard.
Thank you.
George, you should interview yourself about intuition. I think you got it right on. And I think a lot of listeners would agree. I've been wanting to shoot this story about this out-of-body experience within a dream that was precognitive of two people dying the next day. I was looking forward to April 11th for a very long time, like over 6 months. And I was thinking about it because it was this person's birthday. I really had a falling out. I wanted to wish them a happy birthday because that's all we would ever say.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about that. And that night I had this dream where I'm standing in a grassy field with this girl, this dark-haired girl who is about my age. And I take her hand and I say, are you ready? And she goes, no, I'm nervous. I'm like, oh, there's nothing to be nervous about. Trust me. And so we start. She goes, okay, whatever. So we start rising up out of our bodies. And I feel that same feeling that everyone talks about. I thought back to my conscious mind. Wow, this is an out-of-body experience, and it feels amazing. And that's all I saw. Our bodies, it just felt great as we kept going.
She was able to do that too.
Yeah, we took each other's hands, and we went up, and it just felt so amazing. I yelled out, "I lied! This was way better than I told you it would be." and that was the end of the dream. And I wake up, not to find out too much later that my stepdad had been found. I'm dead.
Oh.
And then a little while later, I found out that my friend from high school, dark hair, my peer and everything, had died from lymphoma that night too.
Gosh, that's awesome. See, there's got to be something to this, Richard, somewhere.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I'm sorry to hear about those experiences, obviously very sad events. That same night, lots of people would have been having other dreams that didn't come true. And tonight, people will have similar dreams that they won't tell us about because the next day, negative events didn't happen.
Let's talk about probability, Richard, when we come back, because I think that's where you're headed. We'll be right back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your final calls. Richard, the marvel we called life, is it an accident, grand design? What do you think?
Well, it's quite a big question. I think that I'm a big believer in evolution. I think we understand how we've evolved to be what we are. Where life originally comes from, I know there's all sorts of ideas about that, but you can always go back and say, well, where did the universe come from and so on. But it doesn't really help to then go, oh, well, I think it's God or we're created or whatever, because that's just replacing one mysterious source with another. I don't know the answer to that question, but I don't think it's helpful just to use other terms which are equally sort of mysterious in their origins.
Okay, back to the final calls. We'll go west of the Rockies. Let's go to Joseph in Anaheim, California.
How you doing, boys?
Good, Joseph.
Hi.
I had a question about deja vu, and what you're your perspective is on that, where I feel like I've been there, done that, I have the same feeling. And I think a lot of people can kind of get a feeling for what I'm talking about here.
Absolutely. I mean, deja vu is one of the most common sort of strange experiences. I think almost everyone has experienced it. There are a couple of competing theories about it. One is that there is part of the brain which basically tells you that what you're experiencing is new and is in the present, and that with deja vu, that mechanism is somehow getting disrupted. So you are experiencing something which is in the present, but your brain is telling you you've experienced it before, that it's closer to a memory. And what's interesting about deja vu is although you feel like you've experienced the event before, you can't normally predict what's going to happen next. So you feel like you can, but you can't. So that does seem to fit in with the notion that the brain has somehow got it wrong. It's not that you have actually experienced this before, because otherwise you'd be able to predict what's going to happen, and people don't seem to be able to do that.
Right. And it's like your subconscious mind is almost ahead of it. Like it's like almost telling your conscious mind, and as soon as the conscious mind starts to catch on to the pattern, it seems like it goes away.
That's right. That would fit with that idea as well, that as soon as you become aware of the problem, then the brain kind of corrects for it. But it is very, very curious. There's been a little bit of research done into it. They're also very, very difficult experiences to try and manufacture. We've done some research where you try and give people the same experiences. And in fact, actors do. I mean, night after night, actors have the same experience, saying the same lines, but they don't experience deja vu. So it's a very, very difficult experience to manufacture. But every once in a while, the brain seems to be able to produce it.
I did want to mention one other thing that I've thought about on a few other occasions, whereas, you know, how the black holes tend to pull everything in and compress the matter down to, I would suspect, eventually it would swallow everything up into one giant, you know, Big Bang theory, where everything gets reset. And if everything's under the same, scientific structure or variables, then space and time would recreate itself over and over and again, like all the many cycles that we're so used to.
I guess that's probably true. I mean, there are a few certainties in life, and one is that we all die, and another is that at some point the world we know will come to an end, and everything becomes recycled. So at some point we'll lose the sun's energy, or something catastrophic will happen. There are no certainties. So I mean that seems to be the nature of the universe.
What's the future hold for Richard Wiseman?
I think Thursday I set off for the James Randi meeting, so that's the immediate future. The longer-term future is there's one more book that's going to come out next year, which returns to more mainstream psychology, so I'm very excited about that. And there's a lot more online experiments to come. So, yes, if people follow me on Twitter and so on, they'll find out the latest news. But I'm planning a lot more online experiments. I love this idea of people being able to get involved in science really just from their computers.
So someone like a Bernie Madoff, you've heard of that case, of course, here in this country, right? Makes off with billions of dollars, hides them, does whatever he does with it. What pushes someone to do that, Richard?
Well, I suppose there could be all sorts of things going on. I mean, the most basic level, greed would be the obvious one. Some of the time, I don't know the ins and outs of that particular case, but some of the time, some of those individuals can be driven by trying to help others. They try to be a good person, and in doing so, they get caught up in schemes where they simply can't keep control of it. So it's actually driven, sort of some pathological lying is like this. It's driven by trying to make other people happy, and then obviously reality kind of escapes from them, and they start telling more and more lies, and in the end get caught out, and everybody becomes thoroughly miserable. Now, in that particular instance, I don't know which it could be, but some of the time with pathological liars, at least, they're not bad people. They just keep on telling people what they want to hear, and that just leads them to some very dark places.
Maria in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Maria.
Good morning, gentlemen. Oh, I'm so happy. I have been trying for years to get through to you.
Perfect. You made it.
Yes. You were talking before about animals having these psychic powers. How would Richard explain the fact that on two separate occasions, two separate dogs shared the same paranormal experience I did at exactly the same time? I mean, I'd been hearing this loud whispered voice calling my name from when I was a year old or even less, and my dog, I thought was sleeping, but apparently he heard it the same time I did, lifted his head, his hackles went up, he got up slowly, turned around, he was facing away from it, turned around, and very slowly, his ears disappeared into his head. His fangs were bared. His tongue turned blue, and he looked at exactly the spot where the voice came from, and the magnificent growl and snarl came out. He was stalking it. Needless to say, I never heard that voice ever again. The second time, it was a shepherd, old English sheepdog mix. It was the middle of a hot summer day, and my daughter and I had been shopping. She had a fifth floor walk up. She was bringing up the packages. The dog ran down barking, and I didn't know what happened. I look out, and he's running back towards me, chasing this young man into my daughter's living room. And he stopped at the door. As I looked in, there was no one there. When I told my daughter, she said, what was he wearing? Not what did he look like. She had been telling us about this young man who hung around as she was cooking or doing the dishes in the evening, or he was just there, and then he'd disappear. And she was frightened at first. She told everyone, me, my sons, and my son said, if you don't do something, I'm going to the priest. I want an exorcism. I think it's an incubus. Anyway, it just disappeared. And I had remembered from my childhood, my father had done this thing. You have an Italian woman comes on. I don't recall her name. I'm sorry. It's this thing that was taught from father to oldest son on Christmas Eve in the Italian tradition. And it's near as I can guess, it's sort of an exorcism. I called my father, and the baby had been having extremely high fevers. The doctors didn't know why. I told my father, you have to do this. It's called, as near as I can translate, fashanat, go to nothing. And that's what I think it is. And he did that for the baby and my daughter, and this thing never appeared again.
Well, there's lots of experiences there. Just to take the first one, which I think is rather curious there. I mean, it's certainly true that the dogs sense things that humans don't, particularly when it comes to hearing, particularly when it comes to smell. So it could be the dog is hearing something, whatever that thing is that you were hearing as well, the dog is responding to it. It could be the dog is responding to your fear, that you're hearing something or thinking you are. You become afraid, and the dog has a very strong response to that, because we give off all sorts of pheromones and so on when we become afraid. So certainly with animals, I don't think we've even begun to explore their world. There's other evidence that they can actually tell when certain weather patterns are going to happen way before they do, and same with earthquakes as well. So with animals, you have a much more sensory, sort of sophisticated sensory systems than humans, and you might have some of that going on. So, very, very curious. And again, I would say, you know, if you can capture any of this on tape, that's the way to go.
Richard, my late aunt was a psychiatrist, and she devoted her career, once she went from main psychiatry, general psychiatry, to studying telepathy, and changed her entire practice into that area. She wrote several books. One was called Breakthrough to Creativity. And she was convinced that there was something else on the other side that would allow people to have these abilities. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think we don't fully understand the mind and the brain. My argument is not that we have all of the answers. It's simply that we are very good at tripping ourselves up some of the time, and we need to understand that. And that's what the Paranormality book is about. But, you know, there are so many aspects of our behavior which are absolutely fascinating, and creativity is one of them. Again, very, very mysterious about how people, you know, suddenly have ideas pop into their heads and why some people are more creative than others and so on. I don't think science and psychology has really begun to get a handle on that. So there is much work to be done.
Portland, Oregon, Eric's turn on Coast to Coast. Hello, Eric. Go ahead.
Hello. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Excellent topic. Excellent show, as usual. I guess I've pretty much broken it down this way. I can say with certainty that I know that we as humans don't see with our eyes and we don't hear with our ears. Those are just collecting devices for vibrational energy and information. And our brain is the actual receiver. Now, with that being said, I don't think there really is going to be ever any specific proof of ghosts and hauntings because each person is independently different.
Mm-hmm.
And per said vibration that we pick on or pick up on, you could have three people have three different experiences in the same area and have three other people not have anything. And I just think it's because their brain is in tune to that frequency. Now, with that being said, I think also there are no specific haunted locations. I think everywhere is haunted. I think we all share space via 13 dimensions. And with our brain being no different than a receiving device, like a radio, depending on whatever channel we're tuned into, we're going to see what's being projected. And some people might not. Some people might see completely different things that might tie into other things. And I just think it's all about connecting the dots and being able to take all the experiences and kind of connecting the dots and making sense with it. I know 3 years ago I had an awakening myself and had gotten into meditation, and I'm starting to connect lots of dots, George, and it's totally amazing and wonderful. And I can say all along the journey, you've been there right with me. And, you know, my intuition has told me to keep listening and, you know, to call in when I get that intuition to listen.
Yeah.
Usually it's an excellent show and, you know, amazing job. And I just wanted to make my comment to the host and see what he had to say about that. You know, I don't think there will be any specific proof. You might not be able to get it on video because the video might not be tuned to the frequency mm-hmm. it's coming in on.
He may be right there, Richard.
Well, indeed. I mean, I think you're absolutely right about the eyes and the ears essentially being just devices for picking up physical vibrations, and then the brain is the thing that's putting it all together. And you're absolutely right that some people see ghosts and experience these things, and others do not. There are very big, as psychologists would say, individual differences there. Then it comes down to why is that the case? And it seems to be that some people are very creative and very able to see patterns which may or may not actually be there. So I agree with much of that. I think the challenge for science would then be to say, well, if these people are experiencing something genuine, that something to some extent must be out there. Otherwise, by definition, it's all in their mind, in which case, you know, what I'm arguing is correct. So by definition, so there must be something out there, and the question would be, could you sort of build a device which somehow detects that thing? And so far, you know, the people that have worked on the problem haven't been able to do it. And the more it goes on, the more it suggests that the reason is because there is nothing there. So it is. I agree with much of what you've said, and it may be we never get that evidence. You know, we just learn more and more about the brain. So who knows? I think it's impossible to predict what's going to happen in the future with that.
Well, let's go to Lyatris in New York. Get you in here before the break. Go ahead, Lyatris.
Yes, hi. Hi. I think some of the callers have had some really good points to make. And Richard, I appreciate your objectivity because I think that there is a lot of airy-fairy kind of interpretations of certain things that occur. But having said that, I've had some things occur repeatedly in my home that I cannot explain. I can't begin to explain it, but I can say that my husband and I are not producing these. I'm getting images, actually some very refined artistic images etched into physical materials around the house. And when people look at these images, they can identify them quite readily. And, you know, basically people come up with the same, you know, ideas of what they're looking at. Some of them are extremely refined and really quite artistic. I have photographs of them, but I don't know how, other than somebody camping out in my house, you know, to see that we're not creating these, how it could be proven, although it's hard for me to not think about the fact that I need $1 million and that James Randi's got that.
You know. it'd be great to get it. Nobody's gotten it yet, Richard. Richard, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. Invited anytime you want, my friend.
That's very kind. I've had a great time. Thank you very much for having me as a guest.
All of Richard's books, simply go to his website, Richard Wiseman, WISEMAN.com, and we've linked that up for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.